As we begin today, we are 1 year and a half into our 4.5 year journey through all of God's inspired word, which means we're about a third of the way through the entire Bible. And so I hope you will stick with me as we continue this journey verse by verse. Today we're going to pick up the story in 1 Kings chapter 4 at verse number 20. Last time we were together, we were talking about the visit of the Queen of Sheba to Solomon's kingdom and how impressed she was with everything that she saw. Today we're going to go over some of the amazing things that she would have experienced. The prosperity of King Solomon's kingdom is described very detailed in the following passages. 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 20 says, "Judah and Israel were as many as the sand by the sea." Now, it is interesting to me that the writer of this portion of Kings, the prophet that is getting the inspiration of the Holy Spirit here, is already aware that the kingdom is going to split after the death of King Solomon into the southern kingdom of Judah and the northern kingdom of Israel. And so he uses those terms here. But as a whole, at this time, the promise of God to Abraham that his descendants, his seed, would be as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore, that's happened. This is an idiomatic expression that it would be so many you wouldn't really want to try to count them all. But it's not just simply the number of them, it's also their condition, because Solomon's kingdom at its peak was a time of peace and prosperity. So it says here that they ate and they drank and they were happy. They didn't have things to be worried about. Everyone seems to have been perfectly satisfied in their life's condition. Verse 21, Solomon ruled over all the kingdoms from the Euphrates to the land of the Philistines and to the border of Egypt. They brought tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life. So he doesn't just simply have all of the promised land under his control. He has also got tributary kingdoms from the Aramean kingdoms that go up to the little bend of the Euphrates River that's in modern-day Syria, all the way down past Tyre and Sidon, clear down to what we call today the Gaza Strip, which was the Philistine region of Israel, which touches on the border of Egypt, down there at the southeastern corner of the Mediterranean Sea. So all of that region is either directly under Solomon's control as Israeli home territory, or they are in some sort of alliance with King Solomon and are associated with his territory and are paying tribute for that relationship. And how much tribute he's got coming in, we'll see in just a little bit. Verse 22 is related to how much food is being consumed in Solomon's dining facilities, both at Jerusalem and I think other places around his kingdom each and every day. Because he's got lots and lots of people working for him, and they are feeding lots and lots of people that are coming to visit him and have some sort of interchange with him. Remember that the forest of the house of the Forest of Lebanon, that great big building with the 45 full-size tree trunks that are holding up the roof, that is the state dining room. And thousands upon thousands of people are fed there every single day. And so here is the amount of raw food that has to be procured every single day of the year. Verse 22, Solomon's provisions for one day was 30 cores of fine flour. Now that's a Hebrew measure. We go ahead and turn that into bushels. And so that's 187 and a half bushels of the top grade flour, the better grade flour, probably mostly wheat, if not all wheat. So we're talking about 5.5 plus tons of that sort of flour. That's enough bread made from that to easily feed a couple of tens of thousands of people each day. Thinking about some sort of cereal in the morning and a couple of meals where they're going to eat fresh baked bread. But it's not just that fine grain or that best top grain flour that is also being turned into bread. It's also 60 cores of meal, which is probably more of a barley wheat mix. And so 60 cores, so that's twice as much as the fine meal. So you're talking about 11 and a quarter tons of flour. And that's enough to make bread and have like breakfast cereal for many tens of thousands of people each and every day. And so that would make sure that the people serving in King Solomon's kingdom, both at Jerusalem and elsewhere, that they've got their daily meal taken care of as well. So that's the bread portion of each day's needs. How about the meat portion, the protein? It says here that there were 10 fat oxen. So that's the top grade steak we're talking about. So if you think about 700 pounds of usable meat per animal, that's 7,000 pounds of meat, or about 2.5 tons of meat. So that by itself is enough to easily feed 10,000 people with a good appetite for steak. And then you've got 20 pasture-fed cattle. So that would be less quality, but still pretty good tasty meat. So that's still about enough to feed 20,000 or more people. And then it says there's 100 sheep, besides deer, gazelles, roebucks, and fattened fowl. So some good mutton and a lot of wild game that's brought in every day for the preparation. And so we're talking again about many tens of thousands of people being fed a good ration of meat every single day. Probably meat for at least two of their three meals every day. And that would include Solomon's workers, both at Jerusalem and elsewhere. So lots and lots of food. And beyond this, something the scripture doesn't tackle would be all of the vegetables and all of the fruits that would need to be consumed in the diet of these people. So that's a lot of stuff that is coming through the kingdom of Solomon every single day. Verse number 24, for he had dominion over all the region west of the Euphrates from Tifsah to Gaza, over all the kings west of the Euphrates. Now that's again repeating the same area we were talking about before. There's this little bend in the Euphrates River up to the north in modern-day Syria. And so you've got kingdoms that are north of that bend, south of that bend, and west of that bend that are associated with the Israeli kingdom of Solomon. And then you've got the Phoenician peoples of Sidon and Tyre. They're associating themselves with Solomon's kingdom. They're independent from it, but they're allied to him. And then, of course, the Philistines living on the Mediterranean coast, they are tributary to Solomon's kingdom, just like they were tributary to David's kingdom before him. And that takes us all the way down to the Egyptian border. And then, even though it's not mentioned here, you've got the Edomites down to the south, and you've also got the Moabites over on the east, and the Arabian people, the Bedouin peoples that are all over those same territories. All of these groups are in tributary to King Solomon. Verse number 24 continues, he had peace on all sides around him. There was not any war. So peace and the attendant prosperity that went with it made Solomon's kingdom exceptionally famous. Verse number 25, Judah and Israel lived in safety from Dan even to Beersheba. So the heart of this Solomonic kingdom is the Israeli promised land. And all the Israeli people are living securely. It says here, this idiomatic expression, every man under his vine and under his fig tree all the days of Solomon. So all the Israelis, whatever their level was in society, had an easy go of it. There was plenty of food around, plenty of leisure time, plenty of relaxation. And that's what's described by that phrase. Now, verse 26, we'll see this dealt with a few verses later. Solomon also had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots and 12,000 horsemen. So he's got a top-notch chariot force and horse force. Now, he's not supposed to have those things. This is part of the problem of the Solomonic kingdom, is he starts violating the principle of God, where God had told the Israelites long before they ever had kings that they were not supposed to multiply to themselves wives or horses or chariots. The reason for the not multiplying wives was because wives were typically married by kings in order to seal alliances, to seal business deals and trade deals. So this is talking about political power. And God did not want the Israeli kings to think that they were securing their political power by these marriages. And then the horses and the chariots represented military power. And God did not want the Israeli kings to think that they were protected by their own military might. So this is problematic. It's the root. It's the seed root for the problems that we're going to talk about with Solomon next. But more description. Those officers supplied provision for King Solomon, for all who came to King Solomon's table. Each one in his month, they let nothing be lacking. Barley also, and the straw for the horses and the swift steeds, they brought to the place where it was required, each according to his duty. This is hinting a little bit at something we already knew was going on, thanks to the organization of David. And that is that certain regions were on a rotation of serving at the capital city and bringing provisions to the capital city, so that the capital city was never lacking what was needed to keep it moving forward. And so that's all being taken care of here. And then we kind of already talked about this. God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure and breadth of mind like the sand of the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the peoples of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt. So Solomon had been gifted by God wisdom greater than anyone else of his time period, and this made him famous. In fact, that's the reason why the Queen of Sheba came to Jerusalem in our last story that we dealt with last week. Let's go to 1 Kings chapter 10 now, which comes right after the story of the Queen of Sheba. 1 Kings chapter 10, verse number 14. And it says here that the weight of the gold that came to Solomon in 1 year was 666 talents of gold. Now, this is the only other place in inspired scripture that the number 666 appears. The other one being, obviously, the book of Revelation, where it's referencing the number of the beast leader that causes so much trouble right before Jesus comes back. Is there a connection between the two? I honestly don't think so. But I suppose it's always possible that there's some sort of ethereal sort of connection about how Solomon ends up being a traitor. That's traitor, as in a rebel against God and as a leader of Israel and causes so much trouble, as being somehow connected to what the beast leader does. But the only way we'll know for sure is after the beast leader arises and we see what the significance of the number is to his name, will we be able to see if there's any real true connection here. But just looking at the number here, 666 talents of gold, a talent averaging out about 75 pounds. We're basically talking about 25 tons of gold are coming to Solomon every year. And apparently that's a standard amount that's coming in to his coffers. And that's a pretty good sized amount. It's estimated that today there's somewhere over 200,000 tons of gold in circulation. Much of it from ancient times onward has been in circulation. So Solomon must have had quite a large portion of the Middle Eastern gold of his time period that was accumulating into his coffers. Which is why the Israeli kingdom was so, so wealthy. Verse number 15, besides that, which came from the explorers and from the business of the merchants and from all the kings of the West and from the governors of the land. So 666 is just the beginning of annual gold revenues. Now, what's he doing with that gold? Well, a lot of it he's using for decoration. For example, verse number 16, King Solomon made 200 large shields of beaten gold. 600 shekels of gold went into each shield. So 600 shekels, that's somewhere in the neighborhood of 14, 15 pounds, somewhere in that range. And so each of these gold shields were not intended for protection in fighting, but rather they were probably used in special ceremonies, and the rest of the time they hung on the wall as decoration. We're going to find that out in just a moment. So that's a lot of gold made into a lot of shields, but we're not done. Verse 17, he made 300 shields of beaten gold. 3 minas of gold went into each shield. So that's roughly 3 to 4 pounds of gold into each of these shields. So these smaller shields are about a quarter of the size of these larger gold shields. And so all of these shields together are used probably for special ceremonies, but most of the time they're on display. Here, it says, the king put them in the house of the forest of Lebanon. Now, you remember that the house of the forest of Lebanon was this great big facility, probably a dining facility for the most part, 45 pillars that were actually full-sized tree trunks from Lebanon were holding up the roof. So when you sat inside this building, you felt as if you were sitting in the forest of Lebanon. And there was lots of light coming in from windows in three tiers all around the perimeter of this building. And apparently these shields, 500 of them, 200 of the large ones, 300 of the quarter-sized ones, are decorating the walls around those windows. And just imagine for a moment, it was in that room that the Queen of Sheba came and ate and experienced all of the fine foods and all of the wait staff and the environment of this massive dining facility. And that's just one of the many reasons why she said that her breath was taken away, that half of what she'd heard wasn't even half the story of what she'd been told. And so just an amazing place. Now, we're still not done. We were just only now talking about the big dining facility. Think about the throne room next, which was a separate place where Solomon received official visits. And the Queen of Sheba probably would have come to King Solomon in the throne room first. And here's the description of that. The king also made a great ivory throne and overlaid it with the finest gold. Now, ivory is made particularly from elephant tusks, and those would have probably been procured by Solomon's trade missions. The question I have is this ivory then carved into some sort of constructed throne, like would have been done in India, because some ivory could have come from there, or is it possible it was left in raw form, that is, full-sized tusks, and just put together to make some sort of very, very immense throne? And I don't know which of those is true. So you can kind of picture each and wonder which would have been more amazing. Now, both of them, however it was done, was covered in some of this gold that he had on hand. But we're still not done. The throne was up on a platform, and it had six steps going up to this platform. Verse 19, the throne had six steps. At the back of the throne was a calf's head. Now, how that decoration fits in, I'm not altogether certain, other than, remember that the great sea of the water tank that's in the temple complex, it's supported on the back of bulls, and so those bulls represented the tribes of Israel, and perhaps their agricultural pursuits, because the bull would be used to till the land. So maybe that was some sort of connection to the throne here. But we do know this, on each side of the throne were armrests, and two lions standing beside the armrests. So he's got two lions right up next to his throne. And these lions are probably made either of carved ivory covered in gold, or maybe they're gold cast, or maybe they're carved out of olive wood, and then covered in gold. But somehow these lions are next to his throne, either seated or standing, and they represent the power of his kingdom. And then on the steps down below his throne, remember the six steps, it says here, verse 20, while 12 lions stood there, one on each end of the step on the six steps. So we've got the 12 lions representing the 12 tribes that are kind of outlining the approach to his great gold-covered ivory throne, the power of his kingdom. Verse 20 concludes by the like of it was never made in any kingdom. And the descendants of Solomon would have sat upon this throne as well until finally at some point it was destroyed. And so we have lost a great and amazing thing of history when this throne was destroyed. Verse 21, all King Solomon's drinking vessels were of gold, and all the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were of pure gold. None were of silver. Silver wasn't considered as anything in the days of Solomon. So the Queen of Sheba would have eaten in this dining facility, and she wouldn't have eaten off of silver, which is pretty special in our modern idea. She'd have eaten off of and drunk from gold cups and out of gold plates and bowls, because they just had so much gold that they didn't want to use silver when they had gold available. Verse 22 reminds us that we've got this fleet of ships that the king has, ships of Tarshish, which is probably a reference to the style of ship rather than to where they are going, because Tarshish is at the far end of the Mediterranean basin. And these ships are departing out of the Gulf of Aqaba, which means they're going into the Indian Ocean, either to Southeast Africa or to the Indian subcontinent. Kind of hard to tell which of those two places. Possibly he went to both. So he had these fleet of ships of Tarshish at sea with the fleet of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the fleet of ships of Tarshish used to come bringing gold, silver, ivory. We've already seen those items being used. Apes and peacocks. So exotic animals. Apes could come from either Southeast Africa or from the Indian subcontinent. Peacocks only come from the Indian subcontinent. However, some commentators, some translators believe that this last word is not peacock, but rather some sort of other primate, like a baboon. And so that would point more likely to Africa. So you really can't tell ultimately which way these ships were going. And thus, Solomon excelled all the kings of the earth in riches and wisdom. The whole earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put in his mind. Every one of them brought his present articles of silver and gold, garments, myrrh, spices, horses, and mules, so much year by year. So in this time period, the 10th century BC, Solomon was at the center of power in the Middle East, and everybody gravitated toward him. And they came there to see his grand kingdom and to seek out his world-renowned wisdom. And they brought all sorts of gifts that made his kingdom even more powerful and more wealthy. And that is where the trouble begins.